Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. I want to remind you as we jump into this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. You get money back in the end. So go to www.mecu.com. Or you can jump onto our website, steinershow.org, and click on MeQ's banner, www.mecu.com. We've been planning to do this show for a while when we first got the email, which is to do with the 120th anniversary of the Afro-American newspapers. One of the most amazing things that has happened with those newspapers recently is the archiving of the entire history of the Afro-American newspapers. And I have been playing with it and Googling things that has blown my mind and stories that I found from 1902 and 1930 and the rest. And it's amazing. It's just it's our living history right there in these archives are accessible. One of our guests today is John Gartrell, who is the archivist, the Afro archivist. It's good to see you here, John.
Good afternoon.
And he's curated the Growing Up Afro, Snapshots of Black Childhood, that is now at the Lewis Museum downtown. We are also honored to have with us Dr. Skip Sanders, who is the new executive director of Lewis Museum. And welcome to the program, Dr. Skip Sanders. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Mark. A pleasure to be here.
And soon, I think we'll be graced with the presence of Jakey Oliver. And I think there he is. And he's coming in. And John Oliver Jr. Is published the Afro-American newspapers and joins us as well. Good to have him. Always good to see him. I'm sorry I used the word Jakey's because I've known him since we were both young, and that was his name. I'll try to go back to John Oliver during the course of the conversation. Good day.
How you doing, Mark?
Good to see you. How are you?
It's good to be with you.
Always good to see you.
Hey, Skip.
Hey, buddy.
Hi.
Number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. So let's talk about the genesis of this, where this project started, this kind of archiving the Afros and putting them online for the world to use. I guess, should I start with John or John? John.
I guess we'll go with the younger John here. Essentially, the archiving project of the Afro started out about 10 years ago or so, and we were approached by a company by the name of Cold North Wind, which has since was purchased by Google. And they approached Mr. Oliver, and they said, you know, we now have the technology to turn your old publications, the microfilm of the paper, into a digital searchable database where people can go and do research. And, of course, you see not just our newspaper, but a plethora of other newspapers that are moving to the digital world. And so we were very happy to start that partnership.
So what did it take, literally, for you to do this project? This is a huge amount of work. We're talking about 120 years mm-hmm. of newspaper.
Yeah.
And putting these articles and organize them in a fashion like I was Googling everything from W.E.B. Du Bois to the Civic Interest Group to Booker T. Washington to, you know, everything I could think of in American black history and Baltimore black history I was Googling mm-hmm. to find out. And the articles were alive with this history. It just blows my mind.
It took a lot of patience because after we initially found Cold North Wind, we had to negotiate a contract for them to scan all these old microfilms because it took me roughly 10 years to get to that point because I was always curious about how to convert microfilm to digital because I believe that if, in fact, you could digitize microfilm information, that you'd be able to make the accessibility of that information a lot freer. Because before that point in time, the only way to get it was to go through to your local library, and you had to know exactly what year and what month yeah. The edition you were looking for. And it's a lot more fun just getting lost in history by just simply, instead of scrolling through scrolls, just putting in a name and seeing what pops up. After Cold North Wind completed the scanning conversion, we realized that it was rather an imperfect scan, and we weren't able to access the information as well as we had hoped. So we didn't make it really public for another 2 to 3 years, but at which point I got a phone call from Google saying that they had just bought Cold North Wind, and they wanted to enter into a new partnership for purposes of rescanning, heightening the quality, and making it searchable pursuant to the world-renowned search engine that Google had developed. We were very excited, but it took us about 2 to 3 years to negotiate that partnership. Mm-hmm. And then after that, another 2 to 2.5 years to scan all those pages of well over a million some articles. But they finally completed that in January of, I think it is 2011.
Yeah, 2010.
2011. Mm-hmm. And we were at that point free to jump in and explore, but it took... Mark, it took a lot of work, not only on behalf of Google and ProQuest, who helped Google scan a lot of those images for Google, but a lot of the Afro employees to figure out exactly how to make this particular database accessible. So we had to design Afro.com's archive and try to make it as simplistic as possible, but that's where we are at this point. But that's only a stage. We're about to take it up to two
and
levels.
It's easy to use. I mean, it's just Googling in names and ideas and mm-hmm. pops up with all kinds of pieces that just really are amazing. And seeing the old newspapers from the teens and the 20s and the 30s, now things are photograph drawings instead of photographs mm-hmm. is just...
Yeah,
it's an amazing.
It's exciting. Yeah.
So, and what's going on at the Lewis Museum? Out of this archives, are growing up Afro snapshots of Black childhood. So, talk about that exhibit and why you decided to do it this way.
I think the curator of the exhibit should speak first.
Well,
John Cottrell.
Essentially, the exhibit "Growing Up Afro" is actually another side of the Afro mm-hmm. archives. So we just got done talking about our partnership with Google. That's freely available online. Well, as the archivist, I'm in charge of the newspaper morgue of the paper, which has been preserved for over 150 years. It goes back to the Civil War era. And so that morgue has the original photographs and article clippings and sort of the stuff you can put your hands on.
Right.
And so born out of the plethora of items, and we're talking – well over a million original photographs, and just going around and when I came on board with the Afro in 2008, people loved the Afro. I mean, they grew up with it, and they loved telling their story. I sold the paper, or my mother worked for the paper, or I went there for a class trip, and so I went about searching for photographs of children, and that's what it signifies, sort of how the Afro has been the central institution in a lot of people's lives, not just in this area, but around the country, and how people have grown up with the Afro. And so the exhibit is 120 photographs, because we're 120 this year, it features all children, different scenes. There's six different sections, and it really does give a peek into sort of a more holistic perspective on Black life and culture through the lens of childhood.
And it was back in the fall, Mark, that I first met John. I was going to visit Jake, and they put the agreement in front of me to sign for the museum. I got excited right away because I'm like everybody else in the community. I grew up with the Afro. And as John and I have gone around to a couple of places talking about the exhibition, I immediately start reminiscing and talking about my memories that are all connected to the newspaper. For me, and the one, I guess, most recently, John and I were talking to someone, and I brought up the whole Emmett Till saga yes. and how the Afro carried it. A key thing for me was that the Afro was, I think, absolutely important to the community back in those days. Mm-hmm. It covered things the sun did not, would not perhaps cover, and it covered them from the perspective of our community. So there was a trust in the Afro. There was a credibility it had within the community that the community didn't put in any other form of media except its own radio stations. And so all of that just flooded back, and I said, this is going to be a blockbuster at the museum once people know it's there. And it's beautiful. I'm seeing it come up now. It's a gorgeous exhibition. It really is.
And it opens when?
Saturday, June 23rd. Yep. The doors open at 10
and
o'clock.
And goes all the way to December 30th.
Yeah, it'll be there till December the 30th, and, you know, people have plenty of time to go see it.
This is phenomenal. Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. And if you want to see what we're talking about, I invite you to go to the web and go to afro.com, and then it's you can get to it from there, but then it's /Afro Black History Archives. /Google, but just go to afro.com and you can find it, Afro Black History Archives.
It's at the upper right corner, you see an icon or an image that says Unlock the Archives, and just click on that.
Okay, and there it is.
There it is.
And I was just, as you can do it, is that it works that well. I just kind of looked at, you were talking about Emmett Till. I just typed in the words Emmett Till as you were speaking on the Afro Archives, and these articles pop up from 1955, and they're amazing articles about Emmett Till's uncle's about to testify, and the and all the articles around the Emmett Till trial and the Emmett Till murder.
Yeah,
and this is a resource.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So important.
One of the reporters who covered the trial is Moses Newsom, and
he's still with us. Wrote that great book.
Yes.
Well, he's been on my show. Yeah.
Yes, and we recently honored him in our Legends and Pioneer event at the museum this past February. And he is a walking icon journalistically, having covered parts of the Emmett Till trial, and his articles are absolutely riveting. But he also covered the Little Rock Nine.
Right.
As well as being on the Freedom Ride bus that left D.C. and went straight through. He was on the bus that got burnt, the Greyhound bus that got burnt in Alabama. So he is a literal walking icon of the mid-19th century critical black history of the campaigns to free the South for opportunities of black folks.
And one of the things that Moses Newsom, who I have huge respect for, is an amazing, one of our great elders who has done so much, that the black journalists from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and early 60s, especially in the mid-60s, mm-hmm. who worked for black papers around the country, their bravery, their fearlessness in covering the segregated South.
Incredible.
Was amazing. Mm-hmm. It's the story that broke it. Before the white press started breaking it, they broke it because the black press broke it first.
They were there.
And were unafraid to do the story.
Right. That's right. Yeah,
so. And the photographs were unique. I mean, for me, Irving Phillips, was that the right?
That's right.
Right. That's right.
His
that's
photographs
right.
In the Afro were
Irving
just riveting.
Right.
Yeah.
All the Phillips, they did the great, great photos.
It's like a family legacy as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Phillips and the photography, and it was your great-great-grandfather who...
Great-great-grandfather.
Great-great, who started the paper
that's right.
in 1892.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, folks, you can join us here. I'd love to see what you think of the archives. Maybe you want to Google it and check it now. Maybe you were an Afro newsboy or girl who sold the papers. Want to hear your stories, because that's part of what this exhibit is about.
Yeah.
Or maybe you remember as a young person, or maybe now as an older person, the Afro Clean Block campaign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good one.
In these archives. And how that was a huge community institution, what it meant to people to be named the Clean Block.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still going on today. But we're having an event in July.
Yeah, in July.
That will be honoring the newsboys. We did an article about a month ago talking about the old yell that the newsboys used to make, Eddie Afro, that would always tell the neighborhood that the paper was on the street. And we invited those who were newspaper boys and girls to contact us, because we wanted to honor them and to write a vignette about their experience as a result of selling the Afro. And the response has been overwhelming. And we're looking for, among who includes Kwai Yeesi and Elijah Cummings, who also sold the
right,
Afro.
That's right, that's
so,
right, that's
I mean,
right.
So we're looking forward to this reunion of sorts of the old news boys and girls.
When and where will it be?
July 21st at 8:30 in the morning down at the Lewis Museum. Tickets are on sale. You can call the Afro switchboard and we'll get you in touch with the right folks so you can be there in attendance.
That's great.
Yeah, and that's another beautiful thing about this exhibition. It was so easy to begin to just develop natural programs around it that, even intensified the community interest.
Yeah, we definitely have sections within the exhibit about the newsboys, about a clean block, the different contests, the first baby contest and the Easter dress-up
right.
contest, the Easter parades on Pennsylvania Avenue, and then, of course, the demonstrations, you know, how young people were. We talked about Emmett Till. You know, you think about the Civil Rights Movement. You think about the giants and the legends. But children were such an integral part, from Emmett Till to the Four Girls in Birmingham. to so many others. And so there were young people who were on the front lines locally, mm-hmm. here in Baltimore and D.C., at Gwynn Oak Park and Druid Hill. Yeah. So there are photographs in the exhibit that talk about that as well. So it's very dynamic, I think.
Yeah, I think there are six themes. You
Yeah, talk about the six themes.
That's the six themes are A Child Shall Lead Them, which of course is talking about young people and demonstrations. There is Children of All Seasons, which highlights children during different times throughout the year, summer, spring, fall, winter. There is Games We Play, which highlights the games of childhood, you know, checkers, and double dutch, and ring around the rosy, and all that cool stuff.
Right.
There's Worth a Thousand Words, which are just sort of a miscellaneous, just photographs that I absolutely couldn't really classify, but I had to put on the walls. There is Golden School Days, which highlights young people in school, the graduation photos. You know, the Afro had tremendous graduation mm-hmm. pages, mm-hmm. Right. where you would highlight the middle schools, the high school, the elementary school. So you have that. And then the last section is Growing Up Afro, which, you know, sort of talks about how young people were so integral in the history of the paper and the different roles that they serve. So,
Mark, you know, one of the things that I learned since I've been at the museum is this temporary exhibition area we have, which is a huge space altogether. There are 13,000 feet in the Museum of Exhibition Space. So I'm guessing this is about at least a third of that.
It's like 3,200.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I had to fill that.
And he did. But the beautiful thing I didn't know is that, you know, part of our staff actually work like artists. They redesign that space for every exhibition. And I thought that the people did a really magnificent job with this. So they'll move drywall around, build new drywall, but they actually change the space to fit the exhibition. And in this case, they've used color. Mm-hmm. So there's a different color for each theme where that, mm-hmm. you know, photographic theme begins. And then on the door, I noticed today, and I went, wow, there's actually sort of a translucent picture of an Afro newsboy on a bike actually covering our two glass doors that lead you into
it. I love really it. That's great. Yeah. That's great. I can't wait for this exhibit to open. I can't wait to see it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about the Afro-American Newspapers Archives. We're here with, you just heard Dr. Skip Sanders, the Executive Director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum downtown, and John Cottrell, who is the archivist at the Afro, who curated this exhibit at the Lewis Museum, Growing Up Afro, Snapshots of Black Childhood. John Oliver's with us. Jake, of course, is the publisher of the Afro-American Newspapers. And 410-319-8888, we want to hear your thoughts, your memories. Maybe you were, as I said earlier, one of the kids who sold the paper on the street, or whatever it was, just give us a holler, 410-319-8888. And I think I have the name pronounced right. If not, you'll correct me as I get you on the air. Cecilia, you're on the air.
That's me.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you so much for this particular exhibit. The Afro is near and dear to my family. My Aunt May was one of the organizers of the Clean Block Club, one. My mother worked as a reporter for the Afro, and two, then the third thing would be my dad sold the Afro as a little boy. And also, I hope that I can go and look this exhibit up, because Miss Lucille Clifton, the late, great Lucille Clifton, poet laureate of Maryland back in the 70s, was also affiliated with the Afro. I'm not sure exactly to what extent, but I'll be curious to see if anybody could speak to that. And also, my question would be, what do you hope that the children for up today would be able to do with these records?
That's a really important question, I think.
Yeah. I know myself and
John Bartrell
and Mr. Oliver, we've talked to a number of different teacher groups and trying to encourage particularly teachers in the secondary, elementary school level to use the archives online as a tool in the classroom, and to search and browse, because, you know, one of the things we always hear is, well, I didn't know this, and then, you know, then so now if it's online, I always like to say, you know, in the era of Google, I don't know is no longer an excuse. You can just type it in and just get an answer. So we hope and we encourage not just, you know, the school teachers, but parents too. I mean, you got a little time, you gather around holidays, you know, go look up what grandma was doing in 1950. And the really cool thing about it is the time span is from 1902 to the 1980s, and you get the Baltimore edition, the D.C. edition, the national edition. So you really do get a flavor of not just local but national as well.
John, you brought up an important point, I think, about what's happened in education because of all of this today, and that is you can actually have people, children, students, really going to primary resources. And that's an advantage we didn't have in my day very often. But, I mean, you're actually going back to the actual coverage at the time it was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you're not right. having to run out. I mean, that's special. I wanted to say to the caller, you're going to get a double treat because running with this exhibition in our permanent exhibition is on our Arts Wall Gallery is a tribute to Lucille Clifton. We just started that on Friday, and that will be happening during this time as well. So you need to go down.
Yeah. You know, one of the major aspects of this entire effort is to, as Skip and Dr. Saunders referred to as education, is to really provide the younger generations with a perspective. These are articles written about the Black community by members of the Black community that give their perspective, which at that time was the only way that they could get that perspective. They couldn't get it anyplace else. And for that reason, it gives you a snapshot historically of what we thought certain actions which were occurring in and around and inside our community, which in many instances were far different from what you may see in, let's say, the daily papers of that time. There was always one theme, and that was extending the wall of opportunities for minorities. Mm-hmm. And one thing that sort of comes through almost every article was the difficulty in achieving and removing and extending those walls. And that's a lesson, I think, that the younger generation too often tends to take for granted. But when you get back into the 1920s and the 1930s and you see a headline that says that the white Texas white primaries are now outlawed, and then you begin to realize that Black people could not vote in general elections in Texas simply because of their skin color, that's a realization that really shows how far we have come. And it really gives them a lesson that you can't take anything for granted for purposes of what we're attempting to do today and moving forward.
And there's another point that you made that I'd like to come back on to also, Jake, and that is this was the source of finding out the celebratory news as well as the other. Right. You did not get celebratory news about our community anyplace else or really look at the things that were being accomplished and achieved. There was as much good news there as there was sensational news or whatever, you know.
That's right.
And so, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say we have a lot of callers. So let me get some people in. Lots of people calling in. So let's get some of them in here. 410-319-8888. And Denista, you're on the air.
Hi there. It's Denesta.
Denesta, I'm sorry.
My family is from Barbados. I was actually born in Barbados, and we moved to Baltimore when I was four. So coming to this city as a 4 or 5-year-old was just amazing to me. And we used to go, my mother and I would go every other Wednesday and Saturdays to the Lexington Market. And in front of the Lexington Market, there was the peanut man, Constance Peanut.
Yep.
And in front of him was the Afro Newsboy. And I can still hear in my head now him saying, Afro, 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 Afro. And he wasn't a boy. He was probably more like a young adult. But I can still see his face, and I can hear his voice. And that was just such a really sweet memory that just came back to me as I was listening to the show. And I don't remember whether my block ever won an Afro Queen block. But I certainly remember all the energy and like fervor around getting out and cutting your grass and cleaning up the trash and all this work that went into, you know, trying to win the Afro Clean Block. So I'm very excited about the exhibit.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm so happy you joined us with your memories. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Raymond. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Raymond.
I'm Raymond. I was Afro Newsboy when I was actually elementary school. I think what became the largest route in East Baltimore in the Bel Air Edison area. I sort of absorbed some other routes, and I had a little over 300 people on Friday and probably around 200 people on Tuesday. Afro, and my mother used to get upset because when the papers came late, I'd be out like until 10 o'clock delivering them. But it taught me to be responsible, and it taught me to have high customer service and care about people and care about the service I gave people. So it taught me a lot of life lessons, and that carried through all through my life.
Raymond, that's great. Yeah. Jakey?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because I'm thinking about all the people that I know who approached me over the years who were paper boys. And I remember I was talking to Loida Lewis, and she was telling us about, Reggie Lewis's mother was telling us about how,
Reggie,
you know, his route was an important part of his early life on the East Side. So it used to be a saying that, you know, anyone who was worth anything started out selling afros in some form or fashion. And it was not just because it was the afro, but it was the business transactions that young people were exposed to at an early age, and the development of the responsibility for those transactions.
Right.
Because when your route leader would come by on Saturday, you had to cough up the bucks or the return papers, you know. And it was only but so many weeks that you could turn around and look at my mom. I'm kind of short, you know. She was not going to allow that.
No.
So you grew up real fast.
You heard the voice of John Oliver. Jake Oliver, of course, is the publisher of the Afro-American newspaper. His great-grandfather started the paper. We're talking about the archives of the newspaper that were put together by John Gertrell, who is the Afro-archivist and curates the exhibit now at the Lewis Museum called Growing Up Afro, Snapshots of Black Childhood. And Dr. Skip Sanders is with us as executive director of Lewis Museum. 410-319-8888. You want to say before I go back to the public?
I just wanted to say that to the previous callers, those are the kinds of stories that we want told in the gallery as people are walking through. So when it opens on June the 23rd, it's an opportunity.
Right.
One of the reasons why children are the highlight is the young people will see themselves, and the mothers and grandparents will be able to say, that was me.
I can see, the first thing I thought about looking at reading these archives, which I'm becoming addicted to, is that I can see a string of exhibits at Lewis Museum going from subject to subject, whether it's W.E.B. Du Bois or the Civic Interest Group or whatever it is. There's so much in these archives. I just finished reading an article, and I see Leo Burrows on the phone. I'll go to him next about the Civic Interest Group that
CIG.
Miss Oliver, Elizabeth Oliver, wrote at a demonstration that I was on in 1962. 410-319-8888. And Leo Burrows, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark Steiner and Skip Sanders.
Yes.
And is Jakey there?
He is.
Yeah, well, Jakey Oliver, praise God. Listen, I was greatly privileged to be an activist and member and leader in the Civic Interest Group and in the Baltimore, in CORE, in the Congress of Racial Equality.
Mm-hmm.
As we remember, Walter Carter was president of the Baltimore City chapter, Clarence Logan, the chairman of the CIG,
mm-hmm.
and it was a great privilege for me to act as public relations director and recruitment committee chairman for these groups. A little known history fact is that Major George Davidson, the field force commander of the Maryland State Police, used me with the permission of Walter Carter and Clarence Logan as the person to coordinate the state police protection for demonstrators during the Freedom Rides on the Eastern Shore. And he would call me at 12 o'clock at night. Leo, how many demonstrators are coming from the colleges up north and from the state to eastern Maryland and to Cambridge and so forth? I'm just so blessed to have been a part of that. My aunt, Annabelle Coleman, who some of you may or may not know, I was told by my mother that she was, if not the first, among the first or second Miss Santa Claus for the Afro-American newspaper. And reminder that I've got in front of me an article, 1963, the Blue Streak Special, the Afro-American newspaper, and I won't try to read it, but I'll just paraphrase. The Reverends Marion C. Bascom and Robert Newbold and Leo Burrs, Jr. of the CIG were shown through the institution of the Maryland House of Correction. We were there to integrate the Maryland House of Correction, and Warden William Steiner was a warden at that time, and he would not give us a definitive explanation as to when they were going to, in fact, integrate. But the story was headlined, "The Shocking Story of the House of Correction and the Overcrowding and the Discrimination in Which the Black Inmates Were on the Farm," because they had a farm at that time,
right.
"And the white inmates were in the kitchen and working in the warden's office." And it's been just very, very exciting, and I'm so privileged and so blessed to have worked with such fine people. And, of course, Moses Newsom, I heard you talk about him. Mm. What a light, what a courageous guy.
That's right.
That we all respect and love. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Leo. Always good to hear from you, brother, always. Let us go to, let's see, so many callers here. We've got to try to get to everybody, as many people as we can. Let's go to Dixon in Elkton, Maryland. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Dixon.
Thanks
welcome.
Very much. I was pleased to hear Mr. Newsom speak a couple years ago at the lottery. What a powerful presentation, just to echo what the last caller said. But my question is, what about the photographs at the Afro? Have they been preserved, and like the negative photographers would have shot? Are they available too?
We do have a number of original photographs within our collections. They are available for research. And so you could contact the Afro, get in touch with me, and you can shoot me an email. We can talk again. We can set up an opportunity for you to come and do research. Again, the exhibition focuses on the newspaper morgue side of our archives collection. Mm-hmm. So it is a resource that we are encouraging folks to utilize.
I've been sitting here Googling as I was waiting, Mark and everybody. It's really powerful.
Isn't it powerful?
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Dixon, thanks so much. Really, it is. Yeah. You need to see the exhibit, and you also need to go to the archives themselves just to see what's in them and just start searching them. I promise you will be stuck there reading our history through the eyes and the print of the Afro American newspaper here in Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Doc Cheatham, you're on the air.
Eddie Afro, gentlemen, it is an honor. Mark, thank you so much for having this program. And I would be remiss if I did not challenge our entire listening audience. There is no more propitious a time for us to become a member of the Reginald Lewis Museum and to renew our subscriptions with the Afro. I just want to thank you, gentlemen, for sharing the information. And I'm going to go to my over 5,000 Facebook friends tonight and say, folks, if you're really about our folks, join Reginald Lewis Museum during this time. Get your Afro subscription. And, gentlemen, I'm happy to say the unanimous vote took place last night for us to discuss the creation of the historic Civil Rights Commission in Baltimore, because had it not been for the Afro, we would not even know the history that we have.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah, we love you, Doc.
Sure. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Doc.
Gentlemen, there's another caller in here. Try to get a couple more comments, then we get from you all too before we have to break. Elaine in Ellicott City, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Elaine.
To say congratulations, and also, my father, as a young teacher, supplemented his income by working as a linotype. he set linotype for the Afro as Everett Johnson. So, congratulations, and also, you may want to let Maryland Library Association know about the exhibit, because that's something that librarians throughout the state should be aware of. I'm a former librarian, so that might be something you want to keep in mind. Again, thank you, and congratulations.
Definitely. We appreciate that. And we forgot to mention that, Mark, that John has also included some artifacts in this exhibition. So,
yeah, the linotype machines were the big monstrous machines that you often see pictured when you see the production department shots in the 50s. Mm-hmm. They were like steam engines, but, you know, a little bit smaller, but they were just huge. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, we all used to run around in between the machines. But they were producing some of the basic elements that were used to create the type that, in essence, all the production department would have to create individual pages that would weigh hundreds of pounds, made up of this type, and they would have to be able to read backwards and upside down in order to make sure that the accuracy was right. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting, particularly among all my aunts and relatives who were in the Afro. They developed the ability to read upside down and backwards, so they could really see what you were writing if you were doing your homework without looking over your shoulder. So you couldn't get away with very much of anything, you know. But it was the Linotype machine were, in essence, next to the press, they were the monsters of the second floor of the old Afro.
And they'll be in the exhibit.
No, you couldn't move them, but you'll see some old typewriters. There may be some pictures. It looks too large. When he says monstrous, he means monstrous.
They were really big.
So we have to take one very quick call, then we got to go to break because we have to move to our next subject. And want to tell folks how to make sure they get to the museum and get to the archives. So Stanley, you're on the air. We only have about a minute left.
Good evening, Mark and everyone. I just wanted to say how the Afro was revered as trustworthy. I remember my grandmother buying the Afro and then the other papers, and she would like compare the articles, but she would trust the Afro's accuracy and trustworthiness. And I think it's just a testament to the dedication that the folks at the Afro put into the paper.
Thank you, Stanley. So let's talk about what people can do here. We can go to the Reginald F. Lewis Museum.
830 East Pratt Street, right at the Pratt and President, bottom of Jones Falls Expressway. It ends and becomes President, and keep on down to Pratt.
And you're right there. You can't miss it on the left-hand side.
You can't miss it. Or you need glasses.
Or you need something. And John Gartrell, about the exhibit itself. And
Growing Up Afro, Snapshots of Black Childhood from the Afro-American Newspapers. It opens up to the public Saturday, June 23rd, and it runs to December the 30th. We encourage folks to go to the exhibit and, of course, visit us on afro.com and come look at all of our history on display.
And my dear friend, Jakey Oliver. Jake, so, and we need to get people to the archives at afro.com.
Yes, and also to subscribe to the paper. And
there you go.
Also to put down on their calendar the Paperboy event that we're having in
July 21st.
I want to thank you all for being here today and look forward to this exhibit. It's going to be great. We'll put it on our website, steinershow.org, and thank you for all the work, Jake, that you put into getting this over the last 10 years, finally getting this out and up. It's been a labor of love, and John Gartrell for being the archivist and putting all this together and just amazing to work in our Reginald F. Lewis Museum, one of our key institutions in town, this exhibit. We'll see you down at the Reginald F. Lewis.
Yeah, we'll be looking for you.
All right, thank you all. Okay. So we're going to take a brief break and come back and take a look at President Barack Obama's announcement about immigration, the Supreme Court decision that may be coming down about Arizona very soon, the DREAM Act here in Maryland, and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go away.